Welcome to North Shore News and Interviews on Amherst Island Radio. Each week, we keep you updated on newsworthy events, happenings, and conversations that we've had with people in the local community and beyond.
Artistic director for the Waterside Summer Series, Beverly Harris, was presented with the King's Coronation Medal in recognition of her service and outstanding contributions to her community, Ontario, and Canada for the arts. The award was presented by Canadian Senator Peter Harder. Harris has been the artistic director with the Waterside Summer Series for 20 years. The series has become well known in the area for bringing A-list performers to St. Paul's Presbyterian Church on Amherst Island. Harris described her experience in receiving the award and noted the work of board members.
It was a surprise, for sure. It was quite thrilling and humbling, I would have to say. And certainly credit goes to a lot of our board members, past and present, who, of course, work very hard as well. It's not just one person, of course, that pulls something off like this. I certainly share the recognition with all of the people that have worked hard with me over the last 20 years to make Waterside what it is. And our patrons and sponsors, very, very faithful. I guess the pressure on me is that they expect to hear nothing but the best.
The board handles promotion work and events postings, as well as publishing a brochure for the Waterside Summer Series. Harris describes Senator Harder's connection to the series.
Peter Harder happens to be a good friend of a couple on the island. So when she first told me that I was receiving this, I said, "Did you have something to do with this?" And she said, "Absolutely not." But because he is a good friend of theirs, he actually has attended Waterside concerts, unknown to me, and recently has become a sponsor as well.
Harris explains the unique experience for attendees of the Waterside Summer Series.
A sold-out concert is only 150 people, so it's a very up-close, intimate, personal experience, and the patrons get to schmooze with the performers after the concert as well, which doesn't always happen when you go to a concert in a large hall that seats hundreds of people.
Harris describes how they create a unique experience for performers as well.
One thing that we do for our performers is that we cover the costs of their accommodation for two nights on the island, and we provide all of their food and refreshments while they're here. After every concert, we have a buffet supper reception, which the performers absolutely love because it's like a party. And the people that are invited to that are the people that are our sponsors.
Harris notes the different sponsorship levels and how they relate to the island.
Depending on the level of their donation, they're categorized as certain kind of owls. Because, of course, the island is known for its different owls that brings many birders to the island. That seems to appeal to people as well, being categorized as a certain kind of owl.
Harris describes the joy of artists coming back to play again and why they decide to do so.
I find the longer I'm doing it, the easier it seems to become to line up wonderful artists. For one thing, they like to come back, and I think it's because we treat them so well. And they realize that our audience, a few of them have said to me over the years, they can sense how the audience is paying such close attention and is really giving back to the performers.
Harris talks about the food they offer and a feature returning artist.
Often the performers say, "We never get treated like this." You know, so often they get handed their check and thank you very much and goodbye, and they pick up a hamburger somewhere on the way home or whatever, I guess. But with us, it's a real groaning board and lots of wine and beer, whatever they fancy, flowing as well. In fact, one of the outstanding trios that we have coming this year, the Griffin Trio. They are Canadian, but they're considered one of the finest trios in the world today, and they're coming back to us for their seventh appearance on Waterside. So they're on the front cover of our brochure this year.
Harris highlights the first children's performance they had at the Waterside Summer Series and notes another one upcoming in the future.
the majority of our audience tends to be senior citizens. Although last year we had a children's concert, a free children's concert, where one of our performers that was going to be doing a full concert later in the day did a 1 hour show for children. And of course, they came along with their parents or grandparents or whoever was bringing them. That was a big success. And we managed to get a grant to cover the cost of that. And we're doing it again this year with a trio that we have coming.
The free 1 hour children's concert will take place on August 19th at 11:15 a.m. The Poulenc Trio will then put on a full concert at 3:15 in the afternoon. More information and the full schedule of performances can be found on the Waterside Summer Series website. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Loyalist Township Councillor Paul Proderick was elected the new 2025 board chair for Cataraqui Conservation. Proderick has held the role of vice chair with the Conservation Authority for the previous 2 years. After his confirmation in the new role, Proderick spoke about the work they have ahead of them on the board.
There's much work ahead for the board and its members, and you know, I look forward to the challenges ahead and working with staff who are the foundation of the Cataraqui Conservation Authority.
Proderick highlighted locations the Conservation Authority looks after within Loyalist Township.
From a Loyalist Township point of view, the authority has Parrots Bay, which is a beautiful trail to go at any time of the year. Nature, wildlife, and for those that maybe canoe or kayak, it's a great calm area to go. And the other thing that many people don't realize that the Conservation Authority also manages the Wilton Dam for the township.
Proderick explained his interest in the Cataraqui Conservation Authority.
My interest in the authority goes back to the days when I was teaching, and it was a good way to incorporate environmental studies and environmental awareness to kids who maybe don't get a chance to go out to such areas and enjoy, whether it be the water, the nature trails, or the different programming offered by the authority.
Proderick spoke about the conservation's upcoming events programming, including Maple Madness.
Programming is at the heart of the authority, and I look forward to try and get out and see as many different parts of the authority as possible. You know, things like Maple Madness is coming up in March, which is one of the, I would say, foundational programs in the community, always well attended, and you can register for it online right now. And that's one that no matter what your age, it's a great chance to get out and enjoy some of the programming from the authority.
Outgoing chair Gary Oosterhoff was elected to be the new vice chair. Oosterhoff is a member of Kingston City Council, representing the Countryside District. Oosterhoff has been on the Cataraqui Conservation Board since 2017. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Lennox and Addington Council voted down an enhancement that would help make up a 4.7% increase to the county's tax levy. This increase would raise property taxes for residents even more than was expected, but council wouldn't stand for it. The value of all proposed enhancements to the preliminary budget would have been just under $370,000, but council decided against an increase from 2.5% to 3% for the roads and bridges capital levy. Director of Financial Services Mark Day explained the proposed increase to the levy and how it would affect property taxes.
If all those items were included at those values, it would be a total increase of $369,468, or another 1.03%. And the levy change would go up 4.7%, which represents an increase on the average residential property of $86.11 from what's in the budget now of $70.71.
Councillors voiced their concerns about looming tariffs from the United States. Councillor Henry Hogg spoke about the impact to local residents.
I have concerns considering what's happening at the southern border of our country about any increase right now. I just think we really need to take a good hard look at every cent we spend, because there are people that are going to suffer because of these actions.
Councillor John Wise, however, said the impact might not be so bad.
We still don't know what's going to happen there. In any case, if we do have some relatively short-term economic turmoil, I think all the governments in the country, federal, provincial, territorial, will treat that as the same sort of crisis we went through with COVID. There's going to be borrowing. There's going to be wage subsidies. There's going to be support for businesses. Yeah, we'll go into some long-term debt, but that's basically what the financial system is for. I don't think the weight of that is going to fall extremely heavily on residents, at least in the short to medium term.
By the end of discussion, all councillors agreed to deny the roads and bridges increase. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Staff at Loyalist Township wrapped up over 4 years of planning with the approval of the Amherst View West Secondary Plan. The plan acts as a framework to guide future growth and development in the area up until 2046. Work on the project dates back to December 2020, when Council approved the contract with WSP Canada to prepare the plan. Since the project officially launched in 2021, a number of background studies have been completed and amendments have been made. Public engagement opportunities were provided throughout the process, and the final proposed plan is now available to the public. The plan focuses on the urban settlement area of Amherst View, bounded by Taylor Kidd Boulevard to the north, County Road 6 to the west, and Bath Road to the south. According to staff, consultation also took place with the following Indigenous communities: Alderville First Nations, Curve Island First Nations, Hiawatha First Nations, Métis Nation of Ontario, Mississauga of Scugog Island First Nations, and Mohawks of the Bay of Quinte. Mayor Jim Hagedorn noted just how long this project has been going on.
I remember when this started, and then suddenly everything was virtual. Everything changed, but this still continued. And then we were able to come back and complete it in person, which is great.
Project manager with WSP, Nadia DeSanti, explains the engagement program with the community and notes what it entailed.
Over the last 4 years, we've had online, in-person, and hybrid meetings with the community, and we've had a very robust engagement program with the community at large, as well as the Indigenous communities. In terms of what that involved, we had the draft secondary plan presented to the community twice. First one was at a public open house last summer, and then at the statutory meeting in December. And then we also had a community workshop. We've had a couple of meetings with the Indigenous communities that have been engaged and kept informed throughout the entire project.
Hagedorn thanked all that were involved and shared his opinion of the plan.
WSP did a lot of work on this. It was great. They worked well with staff. I also want to thank the public that gave input through the whole process. We had developers, we have property owners. We have just people that are very interested in this development, and they all stayed engaged. They provided information, suggestions, and it really made it so that at this point, it's the best possible document, I believe, and plan to go forward for the township.
DeSanti outlines the next steps.
Following council adoption of the secondary plan, official plan amendment, zoning bylaw amendment, and urban design guidelines, there will be a notice of decision that's issued. Then there's a 20-day appeal period from the date of that notice of decision. Following council adoption as well, the municipal class environmental assessment and notice of completion will be issued. So the environmental study report, the ESR, will be finalized, and it, with the notice of completion, will be available for a 30-day public review. And once that 20-day and 30-day public review process have ended, we're all done.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Staff at Lennox and Addington County are bringing concerns to their local MPP regarding the distribution of funds for electric vehicle charging stations in the area. In a letter to Hastings, Lennox and Addington MPP Rick Brzee, staff also addressed their unsuccessful application to the province's EV Charge ON program. In November 2024, staff were notified that their application to the program was not successful. Since then, staff have now become aware of 41 new electric vehicle charging stations that were approved for funding in Hastings County and Lennox and Addington County. Director of Infrastructure Services Chris Wagger noted the distribution of the stations.
Of the 41 stations that were awarded in the Hastings and Lennox and Addington riding, 39 were located in Hastings, while only two were located in the county of Lennox and Addington.
Both stations are at commercial establishments, including a car dealership and a brewery. Wagger explained why their application to the EV Charge ON program was not successful.
Staff did contact the EV Charge ON program team to inquire about the results and how we can improve our application for future submissions. And we're basically told that there was a lot of applicants, good applicants, and it was basically broken down regionally to spread the EV charging money throughout the province.
In the letter, staff noted the unequal distribution of funds in the riding might support the idea that there's unbalanced awarding of funds within the entire program. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Lennox and Addington Council approved the purchase of two gas dryers for the John M. Parrott Center. The center currently operates three large gas dryers to manage daily laundry operations. The replacement of all three dryers is scheduled for this year as part of the county's 10-year capital plan. Councillor John Wise spoke about the end of burning fossil fuels.
This is typical of millions of decisions that are going to have to be made in institutions and businesses and homes all around the world. Our goal at this point in this country, and anyone who signed that Paris Agreement, is in 25 years, we're supposed to not be burning any fossil fuels.
Council approved the purchase of a 135-pound gas dryer as part of the 2025 pre-capital budget. That dryer has been purchased, and now the other two are accounted for. Staff's report outlined options for purchasing electric dryers, but Director of Long-Term Care Services Angela Malcolm noted an issue.
Two electric dryers would actually affect our generator significantly by putting it at 99% capacity. There are some options available as to whether we have two gas dryers and one electric versus the three natural gas dryers. I would be very concerned about the capacity of our generator system because we are so reliant on so many of our life safety systems with that generator.
Analysis on the emissions, installation costs, and operational costs of electric dryers compared to the center's existing gas dryers was also included. But Wise said there was really no choice.
Clearly, the added cost and the potential strain on the system should there be a power outage make this decision fairly clear-cut in the moment.
Wise spoke about possible steps for the future.
It would be good to revisit our climate change policy, put in some more specific analytical requirements and long-term capital planning in regard to fully electrifying all our facilities. At some point, I guess ideally, JMPC would then have four electrical dryers and a bigger capacity generator to back them up. Let's start thinking long-term and in the context of full electrification over time in all our facilities.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. Rubberized flooring in the Best and Bash Arena in Napanee was a highly contested matter as Council approved their 2025 operating and capital budgets. Discussion at the meeting saw Council amend the budget to reassess how they fund the $70,000 replacement of flooring surrounding one of the rinks within the arena. Originally, the budget set out to use $70,000 from the town's levy, but Councillor Dave Pinnell suggested it be taken from the town's reserve funds.
To have wear and tear on the rubberized floor in the hallways and in the change rooms, I think should be coming from the user pay system, much like what the ice resurfacer is, and also the humidifier that we're purchasing through partially through the building maintenance reserve. I think that if anybody is causing wear and tear on that floor, has some sort of close connection with a user pay, whether it be you've rented the ice surface, you are there for public skating, or somebody has sponsored the public skating, and therefore it should be different than somebody with skates on causing wear and tear than what the general public is.
Councillor Bob Norrie agreed with Pinnell, adding his own points.
I don't even own a pair of skates. I don't mind paying for the scrubber because I do attend banquets and buy supper there once in a while, but or watch a game. But I mean, us in the urban area pay for the water treatment plant through service fees or whatever you want to call them. Bag tags are a similar thing, so we've opened that door. So I agree, it should just come out of the user pay area of the, because that's where the damage happens. My running shoes don't scratch it up.
Mayor Terry Richardson argued it was regular wear and tear.
We're putting money into a facility that everyone benefits from. We can allow it to get wore down. There's a lot of other user groups that use it. It sounds like we're sort of blaming the hockey players and the figure skaters and the public skaters for the wear and tear on a flooring that a lot of other people use as well.
Councillor Angela Hicks described why she didn't agree with the amendment.
I am not in favor of taking anything else out of the reserves. In my mind, this is a consumable item. The roof is, the building is still going to be there. And in 20 years, we're going to have to replace the floor again because the floor is designed. It's a design. It's the way it's designed. It's going to eventually fail. It's a consumable item. It is not something that is part of the building reserve fund, which is intended to eventually replace the existing arena. And so the more we dip into that reserve for this type of item, the longer it's going to take to build up the reserve again in order to do the arena.
Councillor Michael Shank noted the importance of reserve funds.
That's why we're in the predicament we are today, is because everybody kept on sucking from the reserves. When I left here, we had a lot of money in reserves. In those 4 years, it all went away. So we have to start building the reserves so we can afford our fleet. God forbid if we happen to have a fire truck go down. You want this municipality to grow, we better have our books in order.
General Manager of Financial and Information Technology Services and Treasurer Ellen Hamill spoke about the looming possibility of tariffs and how it affected their creation of the 2025 budget.
There's a lot of moving pieces to this conversation right now, up to and including, you know, the tariffs not happening. However, we obviously need to be prepared that this could impact the municipal budget.
Hamill noted which areas might be most impacted.
When we looked at our capital items that we think will be impacted by this, there are a few that kind of rise to the top, primarily as it relates to fleet. And as we said, those will come back to council when we will have contingency plans in place and options for council at that point in time to be able to fund any increase that may come as a result of pending tariffs.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News. A new 5-year agreement with Lennox and Addington County will see the startup of a farmers market at Greater Napanee's historic Town Hall and Market Square this year. The county is expected to engage with businesses in the area, focusing on traffic calming measures for Market Day. The town of Greater Napanee was approached by Lennox and Addington's Chamber of Commerce regarding their interest in operating a farmers market in the area. At their December 10th meeting last year, council directed staff to work with the chamber on a draft operating agreement. The agreement was presented this week, but must undergo revisions before completion. Terms for the market's operations were agreed upon, but an included lease agreement for the use of two offices in the building caused some concerns. Mayor Terry Richardson noted the amount of discussion they had on the matter and addressed the volunteers, saying the town will go ahead with the market once issues are dealt with.
I'm hoping that we're not scaring the folks that are sitting in the bottom of the council chambers away, because we've spent an exorbitant amount of time talking about how we can't do this as opposed to how we can. I think it's marvelous. I think it's absolutely wonderful that you folks have volunteered to get this thing up and running. It's going to be a benefit to our downtown. It's going to be a benefit to our Market Square. We will find a way to make it work.
The proposed lease agreement included the use of a boardroom on the third floor. The proposed fee was $170 a month. These costs and the use of the third floor boardroom were concerns for council. CAO Matthew Grant described their reasoning for the proposed $170 monthly fee.
We took a look at heating, utilities, maintenance costs. We did not include staffing costs for the entire facility. And then we basically created what is 2.7% in the square footage of the building. And added a bit extra because the lease agreement also identifies intermittent use of the third floor boardroom, which would be booked through the municipality's booking system and use of the washroom facilities.
Grant said he felt good about the agreement they had originally proposed.
I think that the agreement that is presented to council, I'm fairly supportive of, and I think it fits in with the direction of the Market Square Advisory Committee and the larger body of work that's happening.
Councillor and member of the town's Market Square Advisory Committee, Dave Pinnell, described his concerns with the use of the third floor boardroom.
It concerns me that on the Market Square Committee, we were talking about not having anybody on the third floor. Third floor would be off limits. And here now we're opening it up.
Deputy Mayor Brian Calver noted his concerns with the monthly fee.
It seems reasonable, and I'm not doubting the work that the chamber does. As a chamber member myself, a very valuable asset to our community. I just want to make sure we are covering our core costs here.
Director of Parks, Recreation and Culture, Chris Brown, explained how they decided on the amount for the fee.
We did it off the last 3 years average. There was an anomaly last year that we started coding a different expense to a line that kind of threw off the average. So we did a 3 year average utility costs and then looked at the percentage of space that they would be using and then used that number to calculate a fair rental fee.
Richardson made note of the work that must be done in the building first.
I don't mind the floor plan that we're looking at, the office space. And for anybody that has seen that office space, I wouldn't say that it's expansive by any stretch of the imagination. It's actually quite small. I think we're all of the opinion that it's going to be some time before we get the downstairs functioning to the way we want to get it functioning. I mean, we've got to gut it first and get rid of all the asbestos, and then we'll rebuild it the way I think we need to rebuild it.
Councillor Michael Shank was the one who suggested removing access to the third floor boardroom within the agreement.
After listening to everybody's comments and everybody's concern and everything else, it's a five-year agreement. It's been how many years that you haven't had an active farmer's market? Every other municipality has a farmer's market. As far as I'm concerned, it's going to be a five-year plan refurbishing the town hall. I agree and concur with what the mayor said about the third floor, that it's out, and what the deputy mayor said and what everybody else is. So just change the thing that you can't use the third floor boardroom.
Another concern raised by council was the chamber having a monopoly on the town's market-based events. Mayor Richardson put that concern to rest.
These folks are willing to try and do a market 1 or 2 days a week. They don't hold the monopoly on the market in the Market Square. That leaves at least another 5 days a week, maybe 6 days a week, depending on how well the Chamber of Commerce gets up and running with respect to their market. It enables anybody else in this community to hold a market in the Market Square. And it doesn't have to be a farmer's market, or it could be just about any kind of market anybody wants to do.
Manager of Legislative Services and Municipal Clerk Jessica Walters read the new revised motion.
The motion is that council receive for information, the Farmers Market Operating Agreement report. Further, that council directs staff to revise the draft agreement to remove any use of the third floor boardroom and include rental of the main floor flex space, the same as any other community group for boardroom space, and that be brought to the February 25th meeting.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans. This is North Shore News.
This has been North Shore News and Interviews. If you have an idea for a story or want to create stories for this show, consider joining our 100% volunteer team. Contact Amherst Island Radio for more details.